The new year, for some reason, is a time of reflection. While all we are celebrating is the earth having made one complete revolution around the sun from some arbitrarily chosen time marker thousands of years ago, there's still, for some reason, a sense of newness, opportunity, hope that a new year celebration brings. But it also brings a time of reflection for the year that has been. And different ones of us will have different thoughts about 2019. For some of us, it was just another year. Same job, same people, same general flow. Everything seemed to just happen as it always has. For others of us, it was a great year. A year of exciting things, maybe graduation, holidays, milestones, an engagement, babies, marriage, significant spiritual growth of some kind. And still for others, it was a year of trial, relationship turmoil, sickness, stress, financial hardship, brokenness, grief. For some of us, it may have been our worst year on record. For others, it may have been our best year on record. And for others, it may have just been somewhere in between. What this means that in one relatively small church community, we have probably experienced the complete range of human emotions as we've all walked different journeys across the course of 2019. And when we're seeking to be an open community, a community where our lives are not hidden from one another, where we weep with those who weep and rejoice with those who rejoice, it presents an opportunity for a unique kind of temptation to rear its ugly head. It can be incredibly hard to reflect on your own year without comparing it to the kinds of years that other people around us have had. To look to the left or to the right at church or in our families or at work and wonder if our year was better or worse than the other people that we know. And when we take social media into account, the number of different people's lives we get to see increases exponentially. All of this opportunity to compare lends itself to one of the more subtle problems that we face. Basing our sense of fairness, our sense of blessedness, our sense of what God is doing in our lives on what other people are experiencing. To kind of look over the fence and see the lush green grass on the other side and feel cheated that on our side the grass might look a bit brown and patchy. We very easily make the lives of those around us the standard by which we judge our own lives. This morning we're going to reflect on a situation that the Apostle Peter found himself in where this very attitude is called to his attention. And as we examine this short passage, we are going to feel the weight of Jesus' challenge to Peter and discover how we can actually be free of this spirit of comparison. The passage I read may be familiar to us. After Jesus' death, the disciples return to what they know best, fishing. There they are, fishing all night, but they catch nothing, absolutely nothing. Now, you might want to say they might be a bit out of practice from having followed Jesus for 3.5 years, but here they are all night fishing, no fish. As morning breaks, Jesus appears on the shore, yet they don't know who it is. And he calls out to them, "Why don't you cast your nets on the other side?" And suddenly there is this huge and miraculous catch of fish. Peter remembers a similar situation earlier in his life when Jesus first called him to be a disciple, and he recognizes that this man on the beach is the resurrected Jesus. He jumps in the water and swims back to shore to be with Jesus. when the disciples come in, they pull in the fish. We even get a record of how many fish there were, 153, massive load of fish that they have caught. They share breakfast with Jesus. Later, Peter and Jesus walk along the beach, and that is where we get this passage that I read this morning. During this morning walk down the beach with the resurrected Jesus, Peter receives from Jesus the greatest desire of his heart. He is forgiven and he is restored. Remember that Peter had denied Jesus 3 times in the courtyard at his trial. 3 times he was questioned about whether he was with Jesus, whether he was a disciple of Jesus, whether he was one of Jesus' closest friends. And each time, Peter denies it, denies that Jesus was his friend and his Lord. The sin of this cowardly denial weighed heavily on Peter's heart. We're told that when the rooster finally crowed and he was made aware of his sin, he ran out and wept bitterly. And that bitter sorrow had been hanging over his head, that guilt and shame had been hanging over his head until this moment, where on the beach, Jesus welcomes Peter, lets him reaffirm his love and devotion 3 times to overcome the 3 times he denied Jesus, and reinstates him to the task that Jesus had called him for, feeding the sheep, caring for the disciples and those who would come to believe in Jesus. This is one of the most touching moments in all of Scripture. A man broken by guilt and shame, restored to the joy of life by the resurrected Jesus. We tend to focus a fair bit on that when we think on this passage, the "Do you love me? Feed my lambs" kind of thing. But there is more to this passage, as we read. And it's here after this restoration that I want to focus our attention this morning. Because in the same breath that Jesus forgives and restores Peter to his place amongst the disciples, he gives Peter a window into his future. Look at verse 18. "Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands and another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go." This he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. And after saying this, he said to him, "Follow me." In short, Jesus says to this newly restored life of following Jesus and feeding his sheep came with a consequence. Literally, this new life was going to be the death of him. And not just any death, but an untimely death at the hand of those who opposed the gospel. The language of Jesus' prophecy here is harrowing. When you were young, you could do whatever you wanted. You dressed yourself, you made your own decisions. You were an independent man. You could go wherever you wanted to go. But a day is coming where you will stretch out your hands and someone else will make those decisions for you. Someone else will dress you and someone else will carry you off where you don't want to go. He has been told possibly the worst thing that you can tell any human. A time is coming when you will lose all control of your life. Peter was to lose his independence. His death was not going to be some glorious, amazing thing. It was going to look like a shocking loss of independence as others captured him and carried him off to his death. Needless to say, Peter is struck by the immensity of this call, rocked by the revelation of his impending demise. And Peter responds how many of us would have responded, by immediately looking to the life of someone else around him and making a comparison. Look at verse 20. Peter turned and saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them, the one who had leaned back against him during the supper and had said, "Lord, who is it that is going to betray you?" This identifies this disciple as John. John never refers to himself as John. He always refers to himself as the disciple that Jesus loved. And when Peter saw him, he said to Jesus, "Lord, what about this man? What about this man?" You can feel the emotion in Peter's question, can't you? It's like he's saying, "Jesus, why me? Why are you singling me out for this life of suffering? Why am I the only one who will give my life in this way? Is this a punishment because I denied you? Didn't you hear when I told you 3 times that I loved you?" As we've already seen, we are no different. We constantly look at the lives of those around us and wonder why our life looks somehow different, maybe worse than the people either side of us, than the greener grass over the fence. In Jesus' response to Peter, and in some of John's editorial comments about the writing of his gospel, this morning we're going to see a way in which we can confront the journey that God has called us to walk and not just hold back the urge to go looking for greener pasture, but see how we can actually joyfully embrace this journey, no matter how good or bad it looks, with both hands. Jesus said to him, "If it is my will that he, John, remain until I come, what is that to you? What is that to you? You follow me." Jesus' answer to Peter's question is stunning for 2 reasons. Firstly, it sees straight past the direction of Peter's question and reveals the direction of his heart. It is possible to think that Peter was concerned for John. He's just sort of asking, "Is John going to be okay?" But Jesus' response highlights the reality that real concern Peter had was for himself. Peter asks about John, but in reality, he was asking about himself. He wanted to know whether he was getting the rough end of the stick. And Jesus is able to turn Peter's eyes back from John, back towards his own heart. What is that to you? Peter, this is not about John. It is about you. Secondly, it reveals the reality that Jesus calls different people to different discipleship journeys. See, we've got fairly used to rigid pathways through life, that everyone sort of treks through the same experiences. We all kind of go to school and work our way from prep all the way to grade 12. And we do some sort of training for employment, maybe university, TAFE, apprenticeships, on-the-job training. And when we get to a job, we start at the bottom and we kind of work our way to the top. Pretty much everyone does their time at each of these stages of life. Everyone works through a very similar process of professional development, but following Christ is nothing like this at all. Jesus' answer reveals that there is a way in which Jesus has an individual call on our lives. The kind of experiences that we are going to go through are going to be different to those around us. The kind of ministries he is going to have us involved in will be different to those around us. And people that he has called us to be might be very different to what he has called others. Jesus has a different journey for me than he does for you. And it is these 2 things that Peter and the other disciples just couldn't comprehend. The text tells us that these very words of Jesus started a rumor that spread amongst the disciples about John. So the saying spread abroad among the brothers that this disciple was not to die. And even here, in writing his gospel, years and years after the event, John has to kind of dispel this myth. He has to kind of say, "No, Jesus didn't actually say I wasn't going to die. He just kind of said, what is it to you, Peter, whether he lives or dies. It seems that all the disciples needed to come to terms with the reality that their concern should not have been on each other and what God was going to do with them as individuals, but it should have been on their own journey of following Jesus. See, to compare journeys is to make someone else's life the standard of discipleship rather than the life of Christ. To look at someone else and say, well, that's the kind of discipleship life that I should expect, is to take them and say, they are what I should be conformed to. But Jesus says, what is that to you? Follow me. As followers of Jesus, we are people who are looking to him and being conformed to him, not being conformed to some version of an ideal life that we see in someone else. But this spirit of comparison is a nasty spirit indeed. It grabs a hold of us all too easily, and it thrusts us into the trap of jealousy and envy. So concerned with what is happening in the lives of others that we fail to see what God is doing in our lives. We need to stop looking at other people and wishing we had the life that they did. Instead, we need to listen to Jesus say, what is that to you? What is their discipleship journey to you? You follow me. What is it to you if God calls the person to your left to work in a Christian workplace while you have to suffer through a brutal boss, or pornography posted all over the walls, or filthy language running you down all the time, or bullying in the workplace? What is it to you if you have to endure while the other Christian seems to get the coasty job? What is it to you if God calls the person on your right to live a quiet life while you are in turmoil? What is it to you if God calls your sister to health and strength, but you to sickness and weakness? What is it to you if God calls your brother to comfort and prosperity, but you to poverty and persecution? What is it to you if God calls your neighbor to be the parents of missionaries and pastors, but you to be the parents of prodigals and rebels? Kind of seems harsh, doesn't it? A harsh thing for Jesus to say. What is that to you? It's almost as if Jesus doesn't care that Peter will suffer a humiliating and agonizing death. But the opposite is actually true. Peter is looking at John and complaining that his call to suffering seems unfair. Jesus is simply saying that making this comparison will be of no benefit to Peter. Making the comparison won't change Peter's discipleship journey. Making the comparison won't make his journey seem any better. In fact, it'll probably make it seem worse. Jesus cares so much for Peter, he doesn't want him to miss out on the glorious journey that lies ahead, because he is trapped in this spirit of comparison. When Jesus says, what is it to you? He is saying, don't look at John, look at me. Follow me. Follow Jesus, the one who surrendered his independence, the one who laid down his rights, the one who gave his life for you. Follow Jesus in the knowledge that whatever you face, I am with you. Now, I want to be clear this morning. I know that many of us were called to walk through very difficult moments in 2019. And it's likely that many of us will continue to walk through these difficult moments in 2020. This passage is not saying that you just need to suck it up and get over yourself. The passage is not lacking in compassion, but it's telling us not to rate 2019 or 2020 or any year based on some arbitrary comparison with other people. but rather to base that year, those moments that you walk through, on whether or not you followed Jesus. We may never know the full mystery of why God calls each disciple of Jesus to walk a different path through life. But we do know that following Jesus is the only way to find hope and joy and compassion that we long for. 2020 is here, maybe quicker than we want it to be, but it's here. And stuff is going to happen this year. It's going to happen to us. It could be good, might be bad. You can either let how your life compares to others determine your experience of 2020, or you can cling to Jesus. You can follow Jesus and find in Him the hope that you desperately need. We have to be content with the life that Jesus leads us into, because there's something far more important than us in this life. And we see exactly what that is when we look at the way John writes about the individual journey of discipleship that Christ calls him to walk. Here in chapter 21 and also in chapter 20, John makes some editorial comments about his writing of this gospel account. Here in chapter 21, look at verse 24. This is the disciple who is bearing witness about these things, and who has written these things, and we know that his testimony is true. Now, there are many other things that Jesus did. Were every one of them to be written, I suppose the world itself could not contain the books that would be written. The world could not contain the accounts of what Jesus has done. You can't write down the totality of what Jesus did, the words he spoke, the miracles he performed, the peoples whose lives were changed by him. And yet John tells us plainly here that he has written a portion of Jesus' life down, that he bears witness to this truth. In other words, John is saying, Jesus did heaps of stuff, and I was a witness to the vast majority of it. And he has allowed me to live long enough to write some of it down. But in John chapter 20, he tells us why he chose the parts of Jesus' life that he did. Back in chapter 20, verses 30 and 31. Now Jesus did many other signs in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these are written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing, you may have life in his name. See, as much as there is an individual call on each of our lives that will take us on different journeys and cause us to experience different things, there is also a universal call of God on our lives. A common call that he makes to all people at all times. And John sums it up perfectly here. John recorded the events that he did in the way that he did for a single goal. It's like John is saying, Jesus did heaps of stuff in our lives, but our lives are not what is important. The journey God called us to walk is not important. What is important is that you come to believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that by believing in him, you will have life. The universal call of God is to see Jesus for who he really is and to surrender to him in faith. And this is what all people at all times are called to do. And this is the call that we will all be judged on. What did we do with Jesus? There is an individual call that God has on the life of every believer, and the details of this call are likely to be different in every case. We are all called to walk different journeys, but there is a universal call of God that is both the starting point and finishing line for all those different journeys. Our journeys are different, but we start and finish in the same place. We start with Jesus Christ by believing that he is the Son of God. And we all finish with seeing him face to face in eternal life. We all start at the same place. We all finish at the same place. We walk very different paths walk through very different experiences, but the same call is on our life, to start with Jesus and finish with Jesus, to start by reaching out to Him in faith and to finish by seeing the object of our faith. I might not know all of the details and full reasons of why God has chosen the individual call He has placed on your life, why you have experienced everything that you have had to walk through in your life, but I do know this: your individual call, regardless of what it is supposed to shout out with clarity, passion, and boldness the universal call of God. Don't you see? The two calls are linked. Your individual call is supposed to shout out the universal call. Your failings in 2020 are supposed to testify to the reality that Jesus is the Christ. Your successes in 2020 are supposed to testify to the reality that Jesus is the Son of God. Your sufferings in 2020 are supposed to testify to your belief in Jesus in spite of everything that is happening, and your victories are supposed to testify to the joy you have in knowing that your eternity is secure. And this is why we can't get caught up in looking over our shoulder or looking over the fence for greener pastures, because it will derail our journey and stop us from seeing how the life that we are living right now, no matter how good or bad it compares to others, the life we are living right now can and needs to bear witness to our Savior. There is no greener grass than the grass beneath the feet of the one who is shouting this universal call of God in the gospel. Look at the way John describes Jesus' tough words to Peter. Verse 19, this little bracketed area that sort of explains what Jesus' prophecy meant. Verse 19, this he said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God. Jesus told Peter that he was going to suffer and die, but he was going to suffer and die to glorify God. Peter's journey looks like brown, dry, dead grass on hard, rocky ground, but it's actually a lush meadow filled with the greenest grass of all, the glory of God. So the question we need to ask ourselves as we confront 2020, as we reflect on 2019, is this: where in my journey right now, no matter how difficult it seems, no matter how it might compare to the lives of those around me, can I find a way to shout out the glorious gospel of God? How is God glorifying Himself through whatever it is that I'm walking through this year? Why is my boss so oppressive and brutal? Well, maybe so that we can show grace to the oppressive and brutal boss. Why is my child so difficult? Maybe so we can show unconditional love. Let them see what our God's love is like. Why are the kids at school so mean? Maybe so you can show kindness and mercy. Or maybe so that you can show that your hope doesn't rest in what other people think of you, but what in your Lord thinks of you. Why am I constantly plagued with sickness and sorrow? Well, because maybe the gospel translates itself best to this world through my weakness and my suffering. I know that many of us will walk through difficult journeys in 2020. I know that for some of us, 2019 was tough, and 2020 could be tougher. I know that. But what I do know is that whatever it looks like, there is no help to be found in comparing our lives with other people. Asking those questions, why does that Christian get it easy while I get it tough? Why does that person get health while I get sickness? Why does that person get joy while I suffer grief and loss? There is nothing to be gained from that question. What is their life and their discipleship journey? What is that to us? We must follow Jesus. So in 2020, resist the urge to look over the fence for greener grass. Look right where you are standing and see how the grass that you are standing on, no matter how brown and dry it might look, how it can be made green by the gospel, by having it shouted loudly through our lives, having God glorify himself through the journey he has called us to walk. That is what we are called to do, not to look to the left or the right, not to look over the fence, but to look where God has us right now as we walk into 2020 and see how he might glorify himself through our victories and our sufferings. Ultimately, it is this message, this glorious message of the gospel that we long to know and we long to share. The message that you can be forgiven, that you can be restored, that you can be brought back into fellowship with God through the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And that is a message that can be shouted from our lives regardless of where we find ourselves. And that would be my plea to us as a church as we start this new year, that our lives would not be marked by a spirit of comparison, but a spirit of proclamation and the God-glorifying work of him in our lives right where we are, showing us compassion so we can show compassion, showing us grace so we can show grace, speaking his gospel to us so we can speak his gospel to others, that God might be glorified through us no matter how difficult it seems. Let's pray together.